Sometimes technology comes along which does something that feels like magic. Virtual fencing to me feels like that. Can you imagine a landscape where all fencing is removed? So the fencing doesn't hurt wildlife anymore, which gets trapped all the time. This opens much bigger questions around what is the role of animals in a landscape and how can we manage landscapes and the commons differently. Join me in the story that started at the bottom of a fjord in a tiny town in Norway and became one of the first virtual fencing companies in the world, one of the global leaders and a true scale-up. Tempering climate change, bringing back rivers, preventing floods and obviously lots and lots of nutrient-dense food. The promises of Region Ag often sounds straight out of a science fiction book. And for these promises to be met, we need to significantly scale regeneration to a landscape scale within this decade. Welcome to a new series where we look into the technologies needed to bring regeneration to a landscape scale. In this series, we'll look at already existing technologies, digital tech, ag tech, new financing mechanisms, etc., that can scale fast enough during the next 10 years. Technologies which put significantly more money into the pockets of farmers, landowners and land stewards who are regenerating their and our soils so they can go faster. And we'll ask the question, what is missing? What needs to be urgently developed over the next years? We're very happy with the support for this series by the Grantham Environmental Trust, which supports strategic communications and collaboration in solving the world's most pressing environmental problems. You can find out more at granthamfoundation.org. In March last year, we launched our membership community, make it easy for fans to support our work, and so many of you have joined as a member. We've launched different types of benefits, exclusive content, Q&A webinars with former guests, Ask Me Anything sessions, plus so much more to come in the future. For more information on the different tiers, benefits, and how to become a member, check gumroad.com/investingregionag or find the link below. Thank you. Welcome to another episode of this podcast series. Today with Oscar Hövde Berntsen, founder and CTO of NoFence. Welcome, Oscar.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
I'm really looking forward to this conversation. And to start with a personal question, we always like to ask, how did you end up focusing on agriculture and soil and specifically on virtual fencing technology, which is very a niche within the niche almost.
Yeah, it seems so. That's a niche right now, but I think it will be the normal in some years. But the history of my journey there is actually all the way from my childhood, where I grew up in the very remote parts of Norway, in the bottom of a fjord between high mountains. And we had some animals, mostly for our own food. I think my father didn't see himself as a farmer, but we had some animals. And the fencing was a really huge obstacle for both me when I wanted to be with the animals and also for the animals when the grass was greener on the other side of the fence. So actually, I had no idea about regenerative agriculture at that time. Obviously, it was quite some years ago. But I had some ideas that technology might someday find its way beyond this fencing, because I think fencing, I hate fences. I hate the signs of private property, keep out, and those things. I enjoy that. Actually, in Norway, there is a saying that is allemannsretten. It's like in English, it's the right of public access. And it's a Norwegian law that everyone can go everywhere in the terrain. And I really enjoy that. And fencing is a problem.
Makes it very difficult. Yeah. But you could never imagine. I mean, you could imagine technology could do something about it. And probably, I mean, it's a very rough terrain as well, which makes fencing very difficult, very costly, and some places impossible. Plus, the animals like to escape when the grass is greener. So how did that, from a small boy in the bottom of a fjord, turned into a technology company? What was a moment you thought, okay, I can actually spend my career, my work, developing something like that? Or did it start in a garage? What was the first practical step from going from, oh, technology could probably do something about it, and actually doing something about it?
Yeah, the thing is that I was studying for engineering, and I had always a dream of having a small-scale farm at a remote part of Norway. I really enjoy living that way. But as I said, I hate fencing. And I love goats, are my favorite animal. So I wanted goats. I didn't want fencing. And I wanted a small-scale farm. So something needed to be done. And then I started really working on the idea. And the trigger that made me really want to start working on it was the fact that GPS became normal. And I saw this as the technology that could make my idea actually work. So I started to buy some equipment and found a corner in my house and started developing.
And when was this, more or less?
I think it was 2007, around that time.
Yeah. Mm. And when did you have the first collar? Because we're talking about, and you have to describe it much better than I do. And if you want to have another talk about virtual fencing, we had Fence, which is one of your competitors / colleagues, on the podcast 6 months ago, 9 months ago, I think. But virtual fencing, the animals wear a collar around their neck and are moving without fencing and are kept in the area where you as a land steward or farmer want it because of GPS, because of sound, and because of sometimes a small electrical shock. But when it was the first time when you started building these things in 2007, when was the first collar around a neck? Like, how long did it take before there was something that could be around a goat? I think goats were the first, but they're also not the easiest animals.
Yeah. Goats were the first. Yeah. The invention is all about making the animals learn how to avoid electric pulse. So sound was the obvious choice. And the first prototype was in 2009. Around October, I went to my father's goats. I think, yeah, it was in October in Norway. It's cold and the winter is coming and there is not much food left on the fields. So when that goat did not want the grain that he was chasing because of that, the sound turned him, the goat turned around because of the sound, because she has experienced the electric pulse from that prototype. And it was kind of an it was an amazing moment. And I remember my father said, now even I believe in this idea.
So basically you put a prototype on a goat, put like a fence, a virtual fence, obviously, in between the goat and some food she was very interested in, grain, and she didn't go for the food. So she didn't go for the grass that is greener on the other side of the quote-unquote virtual fence, but she stopped and returned. And that's quite a powerful...
Yeah. And it was very obvious that she understood what was to come when she returned. She didn't want the electric pulse, and that's why she returned. And how she understood that returning would be a possibility, it's hard to know, but she did. And all the animals after has done the same. So,
and for anybody thinking now, electrical pulse, isn't that very cruel, etc.? What is your standard? Because you must get this question all the time. What is your standard answer to that animal welfare side of things? Why are you putting an electric pulse on an animal? And why is this better than actually the fencing that we currently have? Just to get it out of the way, because we're going to have questions otherwise.
Yeah. It's good to have it out of the way. Absolutely. And the idea is to learn them to avoid the electric pulse. It's, in that view, it's the same as an electric fencing, because they learn that this wire contains electricity and that's why they don't touch it. But they have touched it once, twice, or whoever knows how many times. But they can see it. With virtual fencing, they cannot see it, but they can listen to it. And the effect is more or less the same, I think. So the success of the invention is that they learn to avoid this pulse. And the strength of the pulse is adjusted, actually, from the beginning, it was adjusted on myself. So how much should it hurt to feel the electric pulse? I thought it should hurt as much as I really don't want it. But if I need to escape for some reason, it should not be dangerous or in any kind. It should only hurt a bit.
Yeah.
So I adjusted it away from numbers, but into feelings. Yeah.
And is it like comparable to an electric fence in terms of shock? Is it more or less the same range? What are we talking about in terms of...
It is really difficult to compare it, because if you feel an electric fence, it depends very much on what is your footwear, what is the weather at that, how long is the fence mm-hmm. line, and not at least how big is the energizer. And if you compare it to the energizer, our pulse is about, I think, 5 joules is the energy from an energizer that is strong. Our pulse is 0.1 joule.
Okay. And then the trick, obviously, what you mentioned before, is making sure they learn, and you can actually see exactly how many times an animal needs to actually learn the sound comes before the shock. And so I don't want to go to the shock. And that with a normal fencing, you have no idea. And plus, they cannot escape if they have to. Is the problem that, is it an issue? I don't want to say it's a problem, that you're moving the fencing very regularly. Does it take them a bit of time to get used to that again? Or it's very easy. They don't get confused. Like one day there was a fence here, and now tomorrow there's suddenly a fence on the other side. Is that confusing to the animals, or they get so used that they are constantly in different terrains and that the fencing is a movable, it's not always at the same place? Because I can imagine they might get used to a fence somewhere after a day, and then suddenly the next day they can pass through that. Is that ever an issue, or they figured it out very quickly?
I think the farmer needs to move the fences in kind of the way, so that the animal, because you could move the fences in a way that the animals wouldn't understand. But if you expand a posture and you retract a posture, and a lot of animals is very used to that. And when there is no sound signal, there is no it's no fence. So they are there immediately without doubts. And if they meet the sound signal somewhere, they don't experience it. It's no problem, actually. It seems like they are coping with it very natural. And you know, and I'm smiling, like still smiling, when I see how calm the animals, both goats and cattle and sheep, they are very calm when listening to the sound. They even continue grazing within the sound signal. And they sometimes get the pulse because they really want this. One more grass. I think I can. I have more time to one more grass. And sometimes they get the pulse because they're just too calm.
They went too far. Yeah. They just walked into it. And then, so you had that first prototype, and then I have a lot of other questions. But you had the first prototype, or the first few, 2009. We're now 12 years further. Where are we now? How many? There's a full scale company that's going through a lot of growth, actually. How would you describe No Fence now? We're at the beginning of November, actually, 2021. What would you describe No Fence as of today?
We're a company that is really on the way to becoming a scale-up from a startup. And we have Norway, our home market, is the biggest by far, but the UK market is also becoming quite big. And we have shipped a bit above 35,000 collars to those markets, and sheep and goat and cattle is almost 50-50 for now. And we have 2,500 customers about, I think. Mm.
And they buy the collar, they rent it, they pay. How does the business model work for No Fence?
Yeah, they buy the hardware and then they pay a subscription fee on top of that when they are using the equipment. Mm.
And what has been your biggest surprise? Or also, I'm asking, what makes, I mean, virtual fencing, I think if we now imagine it, we can see, okay, we can get rid of most of the fencing, but I think it can do much more. It enables much more things that we cannot even, it's not just a better fence. Like, it's a very different thing. When you say, I hope it will become the norm very soon, what would that enable us to do with a landscape? Because that's why I'm asking. We're very curious about technology that can get regenerative agriculture and regeneration to a landscape scale, to a much bigger scale than farm by farm or one farm or 10 farms, but actually on a watershed, on an island, on a biome, etc. What would that, if let's say everybody would use a virtual fencing technology of No Fence or somebody else, or what would that be? What would suddenly then become possible?
Yeah, it's almost not imaginable, but
let's try.
What I really want with the idea is that grassing animals, and in particular ruminants, are normally on pasture. Really, I want them to be on pasture, because that is what they were kind of built for. And in that way, the nature and everything are more in harmony, I would say. So your first question is how I came across the regenerative agriculture. And it is my history that I told you about. It's like I came across it because of the idea. It's not I didn't get the idea because of regenerative agriculture. And it is not all founders, I think, would experience what I experienced with childish idea that seemed to maybe change the world. So it's becoming huge. And it's about animals, it's about the plants, it's about the soil, it's even about society and in particular farmers. How is the farming life? So it's about big things. I've derailed a lot from your question. But
No, but I'm very interested. How does it make you feel from a small town in Norway, from the bottom of a fjord, as you said yourself, a childish idea, again, as you said it, and now it seems to be at least taking over two countries and who knows how many other countries and how many animals and how many farmers are suddenly on their phone managing their livestock in still maybe relatively traditional ways, but they're going to be enabled to do way more radical things quite soon as they start removing fencing, as they're opening up landscapes. How is that for you? He's smiling a lot, listeners.
That's I'm really looking forward to travel the world and see how these things changes both the landscape and the people's life, and not at least animals' lives. But it's difficult to answer in English, especially how it feels. But it feels huge. It really does.
And what have you seen with farmers you work with, like in Norway? Have they been doing things with the technology that you didn't expect? Like, have they been able to graze in places you didn't expect, or grazing patterns or things like, wow, I never thought somebody could do that. But yeah, now I see it and it makes sense. Like, what have you been, any surprises there?
Yeah, a lot of surprises and some phone calls from farmers that are kind of, thank you. You have changed my life. And now I see my children will probably take over the farm.
Wow.
So it's enormous when people talk about the technology as the savior for the agriculture on their farm.
And can you describe one?
Yeah, I have some of those stories.
Can you describe one in particular? I mean, maybe one that you remember?
Yeah, there was one young farmer that had taken over the farm for, I think, about 5 years ago. He grew up very interested in football. So when he was a child, he has put on the football shoes and the suit and was going to the match. And then the cows came from the mountains. And obviously, no, there won't be no football game today. We need to chase the cows. And when he said that this is something my children will never experience, with kind of wet eyes in his face. I was there visiting him, so it was more than a phone call. But it really was a big thing for him. And he was very proud of doing this change on the farm and doing that thing as a father to his children. So it was amazing.
And because for many places where you're working, the landscapes are quite rough and big, so fencing is anyway difficult, but also just having a good understanding where your animals are at that moment in a rough terrain can be very helpful, because basically on your phone or on your laptop, as I understand, you can always see which animals are potentially in trouble, which hasn't moved for a while, mm-hmm. and basically keep an eye on and when they don't come from the mountain anymore. And even if they would, you would know where they are. So this technology enables a lot more than just, okay, I can remove some fencing, or I save a lot of time because I don't have to move the electric fencing every time. What is your vision there in terms of having that technology on an animal? What else can it do except for also just making sure they don't go too far away from where you want them to be? What else do you see there, having a collar on every animal?
Yeah, we see the collar almost like a cloud connector for the cow. And the collar itself includes some sensors. that can tell quite a lot about the animal, what the animals are doing, if they are resting, grazing, walking around, whatever. But we could also become in the future a cloud connector for other sensors. For instance, sensors that is swallowed by the cow and is in the rumen and measures pH and temperature. Yeah, and whatever. And we can communicate the data while the cow is on pasture. So we are looking into how to become the preferred cloud connector for cows in the future. And it will become a digital twin for each cow. And I think in some years, every livestock will probably have a digital twin in the cloud, and we would know very much about how their well-being is.
Which we don't now. Like if they're, unless you see them, we have no way of telling at the moment, like as we speak, how your animals are doing. Like you have to go there and observe. That's the only way at the moment, right?
Yeah, you have to rely on the people that is looking for the animal. And as a consumer, you would have to trust the food you're in, trust the farmer, which you obviously do. But anyway, it's interesting to have more, at least I would like to have more insight into the food that I eat. And I would like the animals that I eat to have a good life.
And basically, you can track that all the way. And do you see that your current customers, are they getting closer to that goal of you? Are they removing fencing or placing less fencing? Is like the total amount of fencing with your customers, is that decreasing? Are you measuring that? Is that a KPI for you?
No, we are not measuring it. But there is some stories that tells me very clear that yes, they are. This spring, we had some trouble on delivering on time. And then we had some customers telling that this is a huge problem for me because I have teared down all the fences in my farm. I remove them. Finally, they are not there. So you have to deliver it. You have to deliver the color.
Yeah, yeah. And I hope they got there in time.
Yeah, they got there in time. But it is also a bit about, as a company, we need to be really reliable because the farmers is actually pretending on a digital, like the infrastructure on the farm, the fencing is that, but we are digitizing that infrastructure. And if we're not reliable, then we have a big problem.
And speaking about reliability, how reliable is it? Like, how do you need a proper phone connection, which in many places can be an issue? Do you need, like, can they get lost easily? Do they break? I mean, for sure, at the beginning, it was much more challenging with the earlier prototypes. But what's the current status? Like, how difficult it is to keep animals in a certain area if you don't have fencing anymore? Is it a 99%, or what is the current success rate, or what happens when it goes wrong?
Actually, we keep all the animals. Escaping animals is very rare, actually. And in most cases, it's because they have been chased by a dog or something has happened that they should actually escape.
Mm-hmm. Which is not possible with normal fencing, or they go through and then they never come back.
Yeah. Yeah, it becomes very dangerous for the animals, at least in normal fencing.
Yeah.
They could get stuck. So we are very successful in the success rate of, I think all the animals is learning how to avoid the electric poles, and all the animals is kept inside the paddock that the farmer has drawn up.
And even if they escape, I understand, they can easily come back. Like they don't get a shock on the way in. They only get one on the way out, which means if you have one that is, there's always one that likes to escape and likes to look for the edges, etc. But instead of that one with a normal fence, he or she, probably she, would go through and tear down the fence, meaning everybody else could escape as well. In this case, she's the only one that escapes and probably will come back as they're all herd animals, and at some point they will get lonely and they come back in. So the incident is way smaller than it is with a normal fence, if I understand it right.
Yeah, that's right. And the way things works when they escape is that they get the sound signal and they get the pulse, and then the same procedure is started over again if they don't retreat back into the pasture. And they will get a sound signal and a pulse, and the third time also a sound signal and a pulse. Then the farmer would get a notification on his phone telling that now you should probably go look for your animal.
And you should look here.
Yeah, you should look. Yeah, that's right. Here she is.
Which is enormous. I mean, people without animals, I don't think understand how much. I read some case studies, how much time, especially on enormous farms, I mean, we're talking Australia, etc., how much time they spend on looking for animals. It's mind-boggling, like how often they get lost. And then you have to think almost helicopter, basically, to find them in some cases. And with this, it's GPS and more or less you know where they are, actually quite specifically. But what happens, you mentioned predators before, and you are in a country where there are some predators. What happens, because also our idea of fencing is we keep the predators out and the animals in. Now there's no fencing, at least not for the predators. What has been your experiences with wolves, with bears, with like, let's say, larger predators that might like to eat every now and then, especially a smaller animal?
Yeah, it is mostly wolves and lynx is quite common. And to build a fence that can keep those out of the fence is that some people try to build those fences, and those I have spoken with is unsuccessful. The predators is able to get in there anyway. But the sheep is not able to get out, of course. So they get caught. But I have had some stories from the customers saying that because of no fence, there was only one lamb that was taken because they all run back to the farm to safety. Obviously, they would get the electric pulse, but they didn't bother. It's totally okay with an electric pulse instead of a wolf.
Yeah, of course. So actually, you're saying it might be better than fencing because they can get stuck, or they are in the fencing. So as soon as a predator gets in, way more than one lamb gets probably killed, not eaten, but probably killed for sure.
Mm, absolutely. And also in the areas with a lot of predators in Norway, the farmers are actually moving the animals to another area when they know there is a wolf in the area. And with no fence, it is only animal handling and not fence handling to move animals. So it's quite easy to do that so you can move them to a place where there is no fencing.
Yeah, true. You can open up whole new parts of a landscape to grazing. Have you seen that a lot? Like people are taking it beyond their traditional fencing, like taking it to other places?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's the reason in Norway. The product that we have made is for conservation grazing. And a lot of our customers is buying no fence just of that reason, because they have some land they're not able to utilize. But with no fence, it is actually possible to utilize some land that never before was used. So it opens new parts of the landscape. But that's special to Norway, I think.
Mm. And that's what you're doing but also in the UK, I think you're trialing with actually somebody we interviewed here, Isabella Tree and her husband, Charlie, of Knepp Estate. We had her on, going to say a year and a half ago, but I will definitely put the link in the show notes. And it's very interesting to see this virtual, because they removed all internal fencing, but see this virtual fencing technology coming to rewilding. Have you already visited them, or have you seen something yet? Well, what is your experience, let's say, with the rewilding community and virtual fencing? Are you excited? What can you see there?
I'm excited about everything you could use the virtual fencing to. But yes, it is. I haven't had the pleasure of traveling yet after Corona, but I'm really looking forward to do that. But I have understood that they are really getting value from their use of virtual fencing. Hmm.
Super interesting. And it's a tricky question because, of course, you're working on a technology company for landscape scale regeneration, if we can say it like that. But from talking to your customers, is there any other technology you wish was there for managing large landscapes? Like, okay, virtual fencing is being worked on. It's applicable already. It's ready. What do you hear from them? Is there anything else that the farmers say, ooh, now I experienced this. Now it would be amazing to have X, Y, Z. Or are they just very happy with the virtual fencing one? What is your next idea? Are you thinking about something else, that a childish technology dream that could work on this level and this scale of potential impact? Or what do you see?
Well, obviously, the virtual fencing is opening new possibilities. And We are now developing the product more suitable for managed grazing. It is the managed grazing farmers that is our target customer in the development that we do. And we try to make a product both in terms of the user experience and also in actual hardware that is perfectly suitable to managed grazing. Then it's a new kind of era for me as a founder, when actually you could maximize the yield from the field, make the life better for the animal, make more kind of products, produce more food, and in the same time, make it better to be a farmer and better to be soil and even a climate change impact. So it is tremendous.
And what needs to happen? Are there very small adjustments you need to do to the technology and the software, or larger ones? What are the gaps between what you have now and what would be the ideal product for, let's say, managed grazing?
We have quite a lot of customers using our system within managed grazing already. And then that's back to your question about what do they see. And when we have feedback from them very often, and we're trying to make changes on the app so that their feedback is actually getting some proposals from us. And then there is back and forth with those customers. And it's a lot about planning, pasture planning, and it's a lot about weather changes, and it's a lot about the plants.
To track the pasture, basically.
Yeah. And the history of the land, so to speak, or the history of the pasture. How long time since the last grassing activity on the actual pasture and such things. And it's all about making a good user experience for those customers.
And do you remember, because you mentioned we developed this product and the first customers, and many of them still are, mostly in conservation grazing. And then there must have been someday someone showing up and saying, I would like to use, or maybe I am using it in managed grazing. Was that the first time you heard about it, or you already knew about it before? Like these farmers that are using ruminants, mostly cows, really to build their soil and not just against fires or conservation practices. You remember that first time a customer or a potential customer said, I would like to use this for managed grazing. And you thought, what is he talking about? You remember that moment, or was that a gradual thing that you went out to look for these people?
Yeah, it was a gradual thing. And it is some Norwegian that has been very in front. And it is quite some years ago since I spoke to a guy called Trond Kvåle, who spoke warmly about the omega-3 in the fat of his cows because of pasture use. And then he talked to me a couple of years later and said that when he has tried this managed grazing practices, he is able to utilize even more of the grass, and it gradually opened my mind to the impact from that way of doing grazing.
I think it's the same person. Could it be the same one? I will link it below, but that's leading the Savory Hub in the Nordics. I think I've heard somebody talk about the omega-3 and the managed grazing. But of course, for managed grazers, this is heaven, because they can plan, they can move the animals 5 times a day if they want to, or it opens up a whole new array of possibilities of somebody that has to manage their grazing very differently. And suddenly they have technology that does it. Oh, even before that, it was, of course, the movable electric fence was already a huge improvement compared to fixed fencing, but this is a whole new level for them. Yeah, I can imagine the excitement. And if you picture this movement, you're seeing it happening, of getting technology on any animal and getting a lot of data from that. And of course, the whole possibilities of virtual fencing. And imagine we're in a theater, it could be an old one, let's say we're on stage and I'm interviewing you, and the room is full of investors. What would you tell them? They're excited about soil, they're excited about animal welfare. What would you tell them? Of course, we're not giving investment advice, but what would you tell them to go look for, or to visit, or to understand this part of the role of animals in a landscape better? What would you tell them to, when they get out of the theater and they're all excited, what should they do first to understand better their potential role also as an investor in this space? Where should they look? Who should they talk to? Who should they visit? What should they read, etc., to understand better the role of the animal?
Big question. I would say that it is more or less beyond doubt that managed grazing has a huge possible impact. But there is some obstacles in how to speed up the transition towards managed grazing. And as far as I know, the farming industry is very much about generations. It's very much about slow changes. And a couple of times I've had something we call a virtual coffee with the founder of Vens, Frank Wooten.
Which we interviewed, yeah.
And the last time we spoke, we said to each other that let's look forward to the day when farmers no longer ask whether or not virtual fencing is the future. They should ask whether or not no fence or Vens is the best solution. And as far as I have experienced, farmers is very into getting new technology. And they are rapidly, in Norway at least, they are changing their way of farming very quickly when technology is an enabler. So I think the way we think about this is that with the technology, we will probably speed up the transition to managed grazing very much more rapidly than if you just told the farmer what about the basics in managed grazing. So those investors should try to see the world more like the big picture. What role plays the ruminant in the landscape from ancient times? And I think actually the technologies that we are working on is making a transition back to before, how nature kind of designed the ruminants and the plants and the soil. It's interesting with the research around the topic, but when you retract and see it all from distance, it feels for me very obvious that this is a good direction.
And do you see with like clients or potential clients, like could there be a role for financing that transition? Is the fact that they have to buy the collars and maybe see like the results in a year or 2 years, is that an issue until now? Like, is there a role for finance broader, not just investors, but for finance to play to speed up that transition, make it easier for more farmers to get on board and start grazing differently? Is that something you've experienced or doesn't seem to be an issue so far?
The pricing on our service or product, whatever you call it, we are said that we are too expensive. But our experience is that when the farmers is actually trying out our solution, the next year they buy more for the same price. And it is, even though they are not all of them is not into managed grazing, but it gives them value, whether or not it is financial value or it is a feeling of more time.
Which is value, yeah.
But from our calculations, the return on investment is quite good when you are doing a transition from set stocking to managed grazing.
And what is quite good? What is what you've seen?
Yeah, I'm
you
sorry.
Can't. Okay, sorry.
I'm very bad in the numbers. I should have a note on that, but I'm sorry.
I think as soon as you start calculating time differently, that's a massive one, especially for farmers that work 80 plus hours a week, spending time with your children, going to soccer, as you mentioned before, bringing your child to soccer is massive. Replacement cost for fencing is very, very expensive. I remember from the interview with Frank, I don't remember the exact data, or the exact numbers, but it was mind-boggling how expensive good fencing is. And keeping up that infrastructure or building it new is incredibly expensive. And then you have all the other added benefits of data on your herd, which you normally don't have. You can actually, that you might see that in a couple of years, but to start selecting for certain ones to make sure to see diseases much earlier because the system tells you, hey, this cow has not been moving for a while or is moving weirdly, let's say, which ones are escaping, time saved with that. I mean, if you start adding them up, it's quite a mind-boggling number, I can imagine. And then the potential for transparency all the way down the value chain as more food companies, which is still slow, but start to pay for that or at least search for farmers that can guarantee this specific animal all the way down to almost your plate. But so what would you do if you would be an investor and you're at the moment, you're not a founder or CTO, so you had your hands free to be an investor, let's say with €1 billion, what would you focus on in this space, in the food and agriculture? It could be anything, but what would you focus your time, attention, and thus also your money and resources on?
It's a question that scares me a bit, actually, to be honest. I should not have my hands in that much money.
I'm asking this question because I'm always curious where the priorities of people would be if, let's say, money or investment money wasn't a limit. Like if that was almost unlimited, what would they focus on? What would their priorities be? It could also be 100 million if that's more comfortable. But I'm asking deliberately a large amount to shock a bit.
Yeah. Well, I would very much like farming to be profitable, especially small-scale farming. And I would very much like the food that we eat to be short-traveled, mostly. And I have some ideas for the future, which I probably would put some money into. Yeah, and there is a lot of countries has subsidies for the agriculture. And I feel that the subsidies and the market power should, if you could integrate both of those ideas into a perfect harmony, I think the agriculture would have changed.
So you would lobby to change subsidies,
yeah,
which is a very worthwhile, it's probably very needed, let's say, especially in the European Union and in the US.
Yeah, I think it more into products from farming, whether or not that is food or if it is rewilding or whatever the product is. But someone wants to buy the product. And if farmers delivered a product and got paid for that product, especially I know Norway best, but it would change the farmer to become more of an
entrepreneur.
Yeah.
So you would invest in, let's say, food companies or fiber companies or companies that significantly value the farmer that is doing the right thing, is building soil.
Yeah.
More money would get into the pockets of farmers that are building soil that is traceable, transparency, etc. So I see a huge role for those. Somebody's doing a very interesting, I would say, podcast, but it's a newsletter, it's not a podcast, on negative carbon food companies or the potential for companies that deliver food that is better for you, the planet, and everybody. And it's making a very strong case about that there are some examples and there will be a huge boom around that. It's Paul Lightfoot, giving a shout out on the podcast. I will put a newsletter in the show notes as well, because it's truly a nice journey he is on to show that there's a lot of demand for this. And there are some early signs and examples of, especially in grazing and in animal protein, but also some others that are not just being a bit cleaner, a bit better, a bit less dirty, but actually much better and actually a positive impact on animal welfare, climate, health, etc. And the seems to be that the consumers are ready for that, which is a very different story than 20, 30 years ago. I can tell you, we saw that. And if you could change one thing, I have an idea what you might choose, but if you have a magic wand and you have a magic power to change one thing, only one thing, I have a lot of people that then say, I would do this and then that. No, one thing only. What would that be? Could be in agriculture, could be in sea, could be in consciousness, could be in taste. But if you could change one thing globally in food and agriculture, what would that be?
It's probably a bit stupid, but I feel almost I have a magic wand in hand around no fence already.
You would remove all fences.
No. I'll try to change the farming into more sustainability.
Fair enough.
And livestock should be fed from grass where they live.
Did it feel like magic the first time you saw, like?
Yeah, it does. It feels like magic. Yeah. So
is it still feels like magic when you, I mean, now it's a bit difficult to visit, obviously, outside Norway, but in Norway, are you still going to new customers sometimes to see their first reaction to moving animals on your phone or on your tablet or on your laptop? Is it as close as you get to magic?
Yeah. It feels like magic, but it is, it's strange how fast it feels like the normal.
Are they skeptical? Like, this animal's never going to stop. My animals are different. They're never going to stop. They're never going to learn.
Yeah, we have some skepticism, absolutely. That skepticism is going to disappear when there is competition and there is the virtual fencing is the normal. But yeah, my magic wand is I cannot come up with anything better than putting the ruminants out on pasture.
Yeah, I think it's in Norway, what's the norm now for livestock? Is like 90-95% inside and they should be out, or is Norway still a bit, let's say, quote unquote, better, even with fencing, etc., but is there still quite a bit of livestock outside, or is it like many other countries where they're inside, fed grain and soy from all over the world, and we call that food?
Yeah, there is both in Norway, and there is regulations that forces the farmer to have their animals outside a number of days each year.
How do you check that? Yeah, with no fence, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. But anyway, they are outside. But the reason for being outside is, for many farmers, it is not about it's not about utilizing the resources or the grass. It's more about doing whatever is
counting the days. Yeah,
counting the days. Yeah. So hopefully it will change when more and more about utilizing resources.
And do you see the consumer in Norway being more interested in this kind of transparency and this kind of quality? I mean, you mentioned the omega-3, like this kind of food as medicine discussion. Is that starting to, because I see it around me happening more and more. Obviously, I'm in a bubble. But how is the situation around that in Norway? Is there starting to be a consumer that's interested not just in a label of organic or non-organic, but actually in something more like this?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It is it's a trend that I see. And it is a trend not only for like what you are saying, but it's about storytelling, I think. It's about the food is a part of something that you can relate to. The cheese that has been made from mountain pasture in Norway gives a better feeling. And most people, especially in the cities, are more and more aware of that food has a history. There is some storytelling behind it.
And now with this, you can almost follow your cow around if you want to. You can get updates, daily updates on how Bertha 25 is doing and if she has escaped today or she touched the virtual vents or not. And final question, I don't know if you have an answer to this. Let's see. Where are you contrarian in the regenerative agriculture movement? So what do you believe to be true in regenerative agriculture that others don't? Like, where are you different in your thoughts? This is definitely inspired by John Kempf, who always in his podcast asks this question. But where do you think significantly differently than most other people in Regen X? So when you go to a conference or a meeting or something, and you all talk about soil, etc., where do you see that you think very differently?
It's difficult to know. But if I say how I think it is, it is interesting with research. It's interesting with how farmers experience the yield increase. But the way I think of this is kind of what was before. Where do the cow come from? Why does goats exist? Why are they gathering when there is ruminant? I mean, with predators around. And there is something about the nature has
figured out
the best way. And then machinery and modern farming has taken that away from them. They more or less, of course, but fencing and that ruminants are indoors because it's profitable short term. I think that you don't need that much knowledge if you just retract and see it from distance. It seems quite obvious that the direction of farming has been wrong for some years.
You cannot unsee it. Yeah. I want to thank you so much, Oscar, for your time today and sharing a bit about the story, but also the background and the bigger picture on the role of animals in landscapes, in agriculture and in nature. Good luck with this very busy period, because I think going from a startup to a scale up is no easy feat. But you seem to enjoying the journey very much, which is a good sign.
Thank you. And you're quite right. It's not easy.
You're still laughing, so that's a good sign.
Yeah.
If you found the Investing in Regenerative Agriculture and Food podcast valuable, there are a few simple ways you can use to support it. Number one, rate and review the podcast on your podcast app. That's the best way for other listeners to find the podcast, and it only takes a few seconds. Number two, share this podcast on social media or email it to your friends and colleagues. Number three, if this podcast has been of value to you and if you have the means, please join my membership community to help grow this platform and allow me to take it further. You can find all the details on gumroad.com/investingregionag or in the description below. Thank you so much and see you at the next podcast.